Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Burdick, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Friday, August 20th. Did you keep your receipts for the school supplies that you bought? I hope so, because you probably bought the wrong markers, the wrong folders, and the wrong glue sticks. Better check. On the previous episode of the Roundup, we talked about digital health technology trends from the perspective of investors and technology companies. Today, we're going to talk about digital health technology trends from the perspective of consumers. Are they ready for all of this? And do they even care? We're going to look for some clues in the latest research from Rock Health, the Pew Charitable Trusts, and the Consumer Technology Association. Today's digital health technology consumers are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you guys doing this morning? Dave?
I'm having some hot fun in the summertime. Nothing like a little fly stone to get the day going.
Excellent. Julie, how about you?
Well, you can all wish me a happy birthday because yesterday was my birthday. And
happy birthday.
Why, thanks.
Yeah, happy birthday.
I didn't think I'd have another lockdown birthday, which it wasn't really a lockdown birthday, but it was a more controlled birthday than I thought I'd have, that's for sure.
Right. You and President Obama scaled back, right?
That's right.
Now, we know both of you use various types of digital health tech from our previous conversation. So let me ask you this. Do you know of anyone who's dead set against using digital health tech to monitor their health or connect to their hospital or doctor? Dave?
Neanderthals are us. The only one I can think of is the caveman on the Geico commercials. He's so desperately trying to fit in, but can't get the hang of things and gets no respect. Our goal should be to make health tech so customer friendly that even a caveman can use it.
Are you getting a, what do they call it? Not a stipend. Residuals?
Royalties.
Royalties. That's the word I'm looking for, right? All right. Thanks, Dave. Julie, do you know anyone who's not connected to the healthcare system and wants to stay that way?
Well, my mother, Judy, is a little bit of a mystery. She loves her Fitbit because she loves to monitor her sleep and her steps and everything that she can be in control of, but she doesn't want any of her doctors to have any of her information among themselves. So that's weird, right?
Yeah. The privacy of data, right? That's important. Thank you. Now, I do have several friends who have phones that are just phones and who want it to stay that way. No internet connection, no email, and they seem to be very happy and less stressed. So maybe they're onto something.
Do they have bomb shelters in their backyard and stuffed with all kinds of provisions?
Bunkers.
I'm afraid to ask because they probably do. All right. Let's talk about some of the latest consumer research on digital health technology. I'll give you a quick review here. Pew surveyed more than 1,200 adults, and most are cool with using smartphones, tablets, and computers to access and share digital health information. Rock Health surveyed more than 8,000 adults, and more of them are doing live video telemedicine, own their own healthcare wearables, and track their health using digital devices. And a report from the Consumer Technology Association says shipments of connected health monitoring devices will jump 23% this year to a record 13 million units. Dave, what do these surveys and reports tell you about consumers' acceptance? And have we crossed the consumer digital health Rubicon yet?
The IQVIA report, also just out, says that there are now more than 350,000 health apps available on the market. That's almost as many health apps as there are healthcare podcasts. Just kidding on the last observation, but sometimes it feels that way. There are enormous numbers of health apps, as we just mentioned, and certainly large numbers of consumers using them. But I don't think they've crossed the Rubicon quite yet and are ready to conquer Rome. But many have jumped the quote-unquote technology chasm that usually occurs around 15 to 20% of market adoption. And they are in the early stage of entering the mainstream market. This phase goes by the name of either early majority or pragmatist and covers the period of time between 20% and 50% market adoption. In other words, this is when innovation really begins to take off. And that's what we're seeing now. At the same time, there's a countervailing technology paradox. That's where productivity declines for a period after introduction and adoption of new innovations. We saw this with personal computers. They emerged in the early 1980s, were in widespread use by the mid-1990s, but didn't contribute meaningfully to productivity improvement until the early 2000s. It also happened with genetics. Science first mapped the human genome in 2000. By 2010, Eric Lander, one of the team leaders for the Genome Project and the current science advisor to President Biden, was so discouraged that he said it wasn't clear that science could ever understand the genetic origins of disease. And now genetics is everywhere in medical treatment. That leads me to believe we're on the path to full-scale consumer adoption of health tech, but meaningful outcome improvement from health tech innovation will still take some more time. The gathering around Rome, the Rubicon is in sight, and all roads lead to value.
Got it, Dave. You know your history. Thank you. Julie, what do you think of these surveys and reports? What do they say about consumers and digital health technology adoption? What are some accelerators? What are some barriers?
Well, I think we all know that COVID has been an accelerant. And you know, one survey showed that 4 in 10 respondents said that the pandemic made them more likely to support data sharing among their providers and want to download their actual healthcare data sitting in an EHR into apps. So that's good. We also saw that more information is better, and especially if it's shared among family members or loved ones. 81% of adults support increased access to health information among their providers, and more than two-thirds of adults want clinicians to exchange information like end-of-life preferences and x-rays and family medical history, things that they look at as being really practical. So that's good to know. What I found interesting was biometrics that we're seeing in everyday life, the CLEAR system at the airport, or your fingerprinting on your phone, or your facial recognition on your phone. These biometrics are changing the way that consumers are thinking about how doctors could share information across them. So fingerprint and unique number, like a unique patient identifier, ranks the highest as ways that consumers felt like their doctors could share information with their permission, which I thought was interesting. Of course, far greater among white and lesser so among Hispanic and African-American populations. So we're still seeing disparities in all these things. And another accelerant, I think, is education. You know, consumers were asked questions about patient data sharing. And when they were told that studies have shown that exposure to violence and lack of access to healthy food or housing can influence a person's health, they were 62% more likely to support data sharing. So it goes to show that education from the right person can make a difference in how consumers think about these things. Now, barriers, I'm not going to even go over the racial disparities and economic disparities issues. We all know them, and they're still pretty serious in terms of what the data is showing. But I thought it was interesting that, you know, some consumers were concerned about who sees their information and what information. So, for instance, the social determinants of health type information, some consumers didn't want that shared broadly across all providers. So we're starting to see some concerns about what people know about, you know, lifestyle and environmental issues across their providers. So that's something to pay attention to. Privacy continues to be a big issue, despite wanting more access to health information on our devices, our phones, et cetera. Privacy concerns doubled from 35 to 62% when consumers were told that the federal privacy protections didn't cover the data stored on those apps. So we as consumers are falling into some sort of false pretense about the safety of our information, and we're worried about it. And last but not least, and what I think might be the biggest barrier, is that faith and health apps without a physician recommendation is a big issue. We just don't buy into all these different apps and technologies unless our doctor is involved in recommending or prescribing those tools. So this means, I think, that we should really encourage providers to do so. And unfortunately, many providers, I think, see these tools as maybe more competitive than additive. So we have a lot to work out in terms of the role that physicians can play in our success with using technology.
Interesting. Thanks, Julie. Dave, anything to add to Julie's comments?
I'd like to hammer home the point I made earlier on the technology adoption paradox. The consulting company Accenture publishes an annual report on consumer adoption of digital health tech. For the first time since they started doing the survey almost a decade ago, growth in the consumer use of wearables and mobile apps actually stalled in 2020. It was down. Consumers, according to Accenture, see benefits in digital health, particularly relating to wellness, health literacy, and easier care access. But there's also a real saturation issue, a fatigue issue, concern about data security, as Julie mentioned, and real frustration that health tech is not lowering the cost of healthcare, particularly health insurance, nor is it improving interactions with the healthcare system. Still takes as long to see a doctor. At the same time, virtual care has become very popular. Younger consumers even seem to prefer it over personalized care. Not a surprise there. Ultimately, this stall in consumer adoption is an opportunity for providers to lead health tech transformation. Julie used the last part of her segment to make that point, I thought, very well. Will they seize the opportunity at this critical moment, this moment of truth? As Shakespeare wrote in Hamlet, to be or not to be, that is the question.
Got it. Thanks, Dave. That's a great segue into the next topic, and that's whether consumers' interest in digital health tech matches the level expressed by venture capitalists and healthcare executives. Julie, are investors in digital health tech companies in the same ballpark as consumers? Where is their alignment? Where is there a gap?
Well, with investment, as we all know, timing is everything. And in this case, I think it depends upon whether we're talking about the health and fitness consumer market or the healthcare device market. And if you look at the smartwatches, like Dave, your smartwatch, they're projected to bring in $6.7 billion of revenue in 2021, which is, I read, an 8% increase. And Peloton is going to increase by a whopping 43% in 2021. I think everyone must have a Peloton by now, right? But when you look at the expectations to impact health outcomes, we all know the evidence is mixed, as Dave talked about in the early history lesson today. In the current healthcare system, the way physicians work, they rarely track any kind of information that is monitored outside of a visit. And there continue to be issues 20 years later from when I started down this road career-wise about the liability that data presents physicians if they actually have the data, but they haven't looked at it and something happens. They just don't want to deal with that. So our service structure doesn't support where things are going. Never mind the fact that there's increasing but still very little reimbursement for this kind of tech. So when you look at devices like blood glucose monitors, smart thermometers, pulse oximeters, you know, they're up 12% from 2020. So that's fantastic. But you have to wonder whether expectations are aligned. But let me just say this. I look at all this super differently. While investment in tech is increasing, so is the investment in new care models. And we're seeing membership models like PlushCare that Accolade just bought, or One Medical, increasingly moving in this direction. They're looking at longitudinal relationships with consumers, with members, with patients. And, you know, dare I say, the value-based care model will start to really look at the need for providers to listen more to consumers and receive alerts when there's actually something to worry about. So we can see how these two worlds converge as the healthcare delivery model actually evolves, but it's evolving slowly still, even despite the pandemic. And, you know, we're getting there. We're just not at scale in a way that someone can look at and say, ah, that's how it should work.
Yeah, thanks, Julie. Yeah, I was offered an opportunity to be in a Peloton commercial. I was going to be the before video, and I turned it down. So, Dave, where do you think healthcare executives are on all this? Are they ahead or behind in terms of matching consumers' interest in digital health tools, and why?
Like you on the Peloton, Dave, most are far behind. On the provider side, executives are scrambling to recapture their lost elective surgery volume. Even though virtual care went through the roof during last spring and summer, most health systems aren't building on the momentum. There's still way too much energy going into optimizing revenues under fee-for-service medicine. On the payer side, they're starting to see their medical loss ratios creep back up as more healthcare transaction activity occurs. The recent Aetna earnings report confirmed that. Payers are dedicating most of their energy to containing revenue outflows, not promoting their members' health and well-being. Despite breakthrough vaccines, pharma is still largely playing the game of limiting competition through patent extensions. It's hard not to become cynical about status quo healthcare. There's lots of talk about value, but nowhere near enough action. It's what Nandan Nilekani, one of the founders of Infosys, describes as MAFA, mistaking articulation for accomplishment. Others may call it hypocrisy, but whatever the term, there's too much clinging to outdated business models and not enough leadership to transform these legacy practices that create low-value care delivery. Having said that, I am encouraged by a handful of health system leaders like Pete McKenna at Baylor Scott & White, James Hereford at mHealth Fairview, and Mark Harrison at Intermountain, who are absolutely committed to transforming healthcare delivery and bringing value to consumers.
Got it. Thanks, Dave. No, that's interesting. There are people on the forefront of this. That's great. Julie, anything to add to Dave's comments?
Yeah, I just want to double down on your mention of those leaders, Dave, and there are a few others as well. But the gap between those leaders and the followers in digital technology is literally growing by the day, you know, given the mandate that so many have been given to drive revenue for systems, as you mentioned. So if these leaders aren't adopting a digital-first, people-centric approach across the organization, I'm not so sure that the followers are going to be there for long. I mean, technology enablement is the new business strategy, and there's literally no time like today to have your board actually be supportive of identifying new ways to drive revenue that actually can be digitally enabled. And there's budget for these things that we've never seen before because of the pandemic and crisis management. And consumer expectations are higher than they've ever been. So if you actually really want to set yourself apart as a leader, today is the day.
Got it. Thanks, Julie. Well said. Well, I did buy an Apple Watch and it told me I don't have AFib. So I have that going for me, Dave. I'll let you know how the rings work out. All right. Now, as always on the roundup, let's talk about next week. Julie, what's making healthcare news the week of August 23rd?
Well, the masks are back, and I am hoping that we start to actually see some productive discussion about masks and how they can prevent things like the fall cold and flu during flu season. So I'd like to see some positive, productive discussion around all this.
Okay. Dave, what's coming down the healthcare tracks the week of August 23rd?
It's the August recess in Congress. I imagine the members are getting an earful from their constituents on mask mandates and infrastructure spending. Let's hope they come back with renewed energy to tame COVID and make sure we're better prepared for the next pandemic. In the meantime, given today's discussion on consumer health tech, I hope our audience will listen to Foresight Health's Digital Front Door song, done to the tune of Looking Out My Front Door by Creedence Clearwater Revival. It's a winner.
It's on the Billboard Top 100, I think.
Yeah, you got to put a link into that.
Dave, if you're not careful, I'm going to start to write a song soon.
Anytime.
Thanks, Dave, and thank you, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on the Healthcare Now Radio Network, iTunes, Spotify, and other streaming services. Subscribe now and don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.